hour is 1:45 and the date is the 5th of April, 1983. The place is room 124, the hearing, judiciary hearing room, located in the capital of Juneau, Alaska. Present for the hearing today are Representative Coxon, Representative Winty, Representative Barnes, and myself, Representative Bussell. Representative Liska is testifying in a Hess hearing at present time. Representative Hayes with the governor and all the other members. Matters that issue today are House Bill 48, which is an act repealing certain insurance law, HJR 8, which is a constitutional amendment, proposing amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to elections for candidates for the office of governor and lieutenant governor. HB 8, which is an act relating to judicial retention elections and providing for an effective date. We have people present to give statements on HB 48 and HJR 8. So it would be my pleasure to do House Bill 48 first and take the statement from Kenneth Moore. Mr. Moore, since we are recording electronically, I'll have to ask you to state your name for the record and then proceed with your statement on the matter, in a matter such as you will, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kenneth Moore, the Director of the Division of Insurance, here speaking in behalf and hopefully the passage of House Bill 48. Just a moment of genesis. The last session, this was Senate Bill 831, which managed to go completely through the Senate chair, all through the House references, and ended up on the House floor just at the moment of the infamous Alaskan Power Authority wrap-up and Senator Coletta's drug bill, and it became a Christmas tree and went down. So, and this is, in essence, is a repealer of what we know as the counter-signature law. Back at the formation of the time of the insurance code, it was written in that regardless of how many licensees outside of the state were involved in a transaction, that the final policy itself had to be signed within the state of Alaska. Gradually over time, this has broken down to the point where it's used with power of attorney, facsimiles, and in effect no longer serves the purpose for which it was intended. In fact, we have in each transaction anyway two licensees, the company which is licensed within the state and the non-resident, if perchance that it was produced outside the state. We have some specific examples of an insurer who takes applications in locations here in Alaska. They are processed electronically in Portland, and instead of being shipped out directly to the consumer, have to all be packaged up, sent to Anchorage, and signed and then put out again. It's just a delay. It creates additional expense. I'd be happy to. Well, one thing that's left in the bill is that there is a penalty left in there. If any insurer makes any kind of payment in the form of a commission to anyone other than a licensee, is subject to those penalties. That was retained in the bill. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you have, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Are there questions of the committee of Mr. Moore? Mr. Moore, did you testify on the bill when it was in Labor and Commerce?
Yes, sir.
Just for the inference, for the information of the committee, it passed from Labor and Commerce 2283, with all members signing due pass. I didn't put a copy.
How many signatures?
Which looks like John Ringstad, Ricky Lee, John Cowdery, Ron Winkie. Is this Malone? I'm sorry.
They're all due pass, though.
Yeah, but I think that's Walt Curtis.
Yeah.
I think this. It could be a forgery, as far as I can see. I couldn't tell. Do you need copies of this?
No, I just.
Are there questions in the committee members or Mr. Moore? Representative Clarkson?
I don't know much about this area. Will this make it easier for an out-of-state insurance company to sell insurance in this state?
No, it will make no difference in the actual sale.
Because they have to be licensed?
Must be licensed.
What is the requirement for licensing?
If
they have a resident agent or something?
Well, to become an insurer licensed, they have to get a certificate from us of qualification, make the necessary deposit. And then before they may sell insurance, then they have to appoint agents.
Is it possible for an out-of-state insurance company with no in-state contacts to receive a license from you?
They can receive a license.
But then they have
to. Then they would have to have some type of agency set up. Yes. The law provides for both resident and non-resident type agents.
What's a non-resident agent?
Mr. Chairman, I'll answer this question. A non-resident is one who has qualified in another state as a licensed agent broker or surplus lines broker and makes application here on petition and certification from the other state.
President Fox.
Continue the. Again, I'm skimming this, first time I've seen it. But Section 220 appears to require not only that there be a countersigning, there's a countersigning requirement, but that a policy cannot be, let's see, top of page 28 of the statutes. Let's see. So there's something like, no company may make, write, place, or cause to be made a policy or contract of insurance or a creation of liability, etc., except through their resident agent, who shall countersign all policy. That seems to me to be two requirements. One, they have to be countersigned. Secondly, they have to be sold only by resident agent.
That is correct.
If you repeal both requirements, then they don't have to be sold through a resident agent.
That is correct, because we have the other licenses for non-resident agents.
Which means I can basically mail order buy insurance through mail order.
Effectively.
If this was repealed.
Well, effectively, it is done anyway.
How do they get a countersign?
It's bought, and then it's sent up here to an agent who then signs them in mass. And they usually make a contract to do them, so what is it, minimum $5 or some such minimal figure. Or if they have an agent here and a non-resident agent outside of state, then they may do it on a make the counter signature on a power of attorney in a facsimile.
Thank you.
Further questions by committee members or Mr. Moore? If not, thank you much, Mr. Moore, for coming down. I guess I have a question that I was going to ask him, and I guess I didn't. I guess I need to ask what the pleasure of the committee is with respect to this. If there are no meaningful or any attempts at amending the thing, it's the committee's desire to move the legislation, not to sit on it, if it's, unless there's some reason by committee members to research or amend or change the bill in some fashion.
Oh, no, we wouldn't. Dare usurp your voice.
If there are no comments, you know, I would ask for a motion to move this piece of legislation on through the process. Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill Number 48, an act repealing certain insurance laws, be moved from the committee.
Is there objection? Hearing none, we will move House Bill 48 to a public meeting today with recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Moore, for coming today. Where is this? We'll keep this moving. Representative Gusendorf is the private sponsor of HB8, and he's not present today. He's on an airplane coming back from Sitka. We have been informed that he'd be here by 1 o'clock. Hopefully he'd be down here by 1:30, and he's not here, so we definitely to him not being here. Let's move on to HJR8. And Mary Lou Miner is with us again today to discuss election issues from the Department of Elections and Revenue. Could you come? We don't have anybody from the Clerk's office down here. Mary Lou, welcome. And since we are recording electronically, I need to ask you to state your name for the record and then proceed with a statement on the bill.
For the record, I'm Mary Lou Miners with the Division of Elections. Chairman Bethel, members of the committee. The House Joint Resolution Number 8, I have some concerns about the time frame. You, in lines 28, 29, on page 1, lines 1, 2, on page 2, speak to a runoff election occurring 2 weeks from the date of certification.
Just a minute, Mary Lou. What we need to do is you're looking at a committee substitute for it. Is that not correct? And a long document. Okay, we need what we did here for the committee's information is we had most of this language in HJR 9. HJR 8 is a lower numbered bill, and due to rules of the road, we yielded to a lower numbered bill. And Mary Lou, just we can go ahead and discuss the committee substitute, but before we can do anything on the committee, we'll have to formally adopt it. But we can go ahead and informally discuss it. We won't do anything with this bill today anyway. But for the purposes of Representative Fox.
Excuse me, I'm having a little trouble getting up to speed here. But if there's another resolution on this that we heard, could I have my file pulled on that? I might have some notes.
HJR 9 is the next one, certainly.
Are they here somewhere? I don't even know where they are.
We can do that to the right one right next to the excuse me,
that's all right. No, that's quite all right.
I seem to remember we had some discussion of this. I couldn't find any notes in here. So maybe there's somewhere else.
They just renumbered 59 out and put an 8 in. Well, does anybody else, any other committee member, want their 9 file?
Oh, yeah, look at all these
notes. There's
some nasty comments by
the lawyer. If not, we'll just proceed. Thank you.
The division's biggest concern is the time frame. This HJR 9 provides for a runoff election to be held the first Tuesday occurring 2 weeks after the date of the certification of the results of the general election, but no later than the last Tuesday in November. Our biggest concern that this is not a realistic figure. Very likely, with in many of the House races recently and in the past election, there was a very strong Libertarian candidate, and it could have been a three-way split, which would have caused a problem as far as there could have been a recount prior to someone having 50% plus one. And so you have a time frame for a recount, and then you'd have to publish your ballots and you'd have to have your election certified, and you'd have to publish your ballots after it was certified as to who the two top vote getters were. You'd have to have your ballots printed. You'd have to have them distributed throughout the state. You would not have the proper time frame to accomplish all this prior to the last Tuesday in November. It takes about 2.5 weeks to certify the election, and I went downstairs since I had worked on the certification. In order to certify an election, in case you're not familiar with it, every single signature on every single ballot register must coincide with the number of ballots that a person that are noted on the back of your register. If you come up with one ballot short, if they know that they have 842 people voted in this precinct, and you come up as a certification team or state canvas team, one ballot short, you must go back and check them all again. I happen to just open this one, and you find things like this all through the election. You don't know whether this person voted, whether they didn't vote, until you get a whole. It happened to be on the top. Then you have to go and check all the people in this kind of a register. And by the time you do this for the whole state, it takes a great deal of time. Then you get something like this where nobody signed. And you have to go and try and figure that out. So your figures, as far as even, that's just for the certification. So 2 weeks, you're really very lucky to have it in 2 weeks. So the division is most concerned about your time frame.
Mary Lou, is there a different certification for the primary than there is for the general?
No, sir.
Same process?
Same process. Same process. You must look at every single voter and be sure that every single voter's signature compares with the number of votes that are cast, and it has to happen for the whole state. And we get places like Good News Day, who signs it all in the absentee register, and you have no idea what they've done at all. So you have to, it takes many hours to try and figure out whether these people actually voted or not. And so the certification process is a very long one. I happen to have been on the state canvas board, both the primary and the general. We worked many days starting at 8 o'clock. We'd work till 9 o'clock at night. We worked Saturdays and Sundays, and we were able to finally finish by the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, which would have been the day that you would have had the election.
Representative Liska.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really, what would you recommend here then for the 2 week primary? You got too short of a fuse here.
We've got, well, first, after it's certified, Representative Liska, then when you decided who the two people were that were going to runoff, you'd have to have their ballots printed. They would have to be delivered to the precinct. You would have to give notice of the election. You would also have to, I know I'm not answering your question, I'm just posing some informational things that hadn't been considered. Then you have the problem of absentee ballot requests. And so if you have a runoff, then those persons that had requested an absentee ballot wouldn't have the opportunity to vote, so they'd be disenfranchised. We looked at January the 8th, the time frame that we arbitrarily picked up Representative Liska, and this is going on the last election. In 84, the election was November 6th. Well, by the time it was certified, it was the 26th of November. And then it gave people till the 1st to recommend, to request a recount. And they had from the 1st of December to the 6th for a recount if they wanted one. Okay, then you have a recount, and then that would put you up to December 11th. Then the last day that you could complete that recount would have been the 21st. And then you'd have to give notice about the 30th of December. And then you take a look at the weather in that time and trying to get those ballots out to Little Diomede and all those places. You're going to have to make some very different changes in the statutes to accommodate those kinds of time frames.
Otherwise, 2 weeks is not going to hack it then.
No, 2 weeks is definitely not going to hack.
A
couple of questions. The proposed committee substitute, which has not been adopted yet, adds legislators.
Yes, sir.
And exactly the same time frame appears there.
Yes, sir.
I assume you didn't draft this, but you don't have, absent this language, you don't have as much of a time problem with legislators, do you? Because they don't take office till January.
No, sir, we don't. But we also have many more recounts in the legislative races than we do in the governor's race.
How long does it take for a recount?
Generally,
10 days.
10 days. By the time.
Is that statutory?
That is according to the statutes. They vary within those. If you applied in 2 days and the mechanism could be set into effect with it, but you have a beginning date to apply and an ending date, and you have that type of time. And it's a very close race, and there are a lot of recounts. It might take 1 day for a recount for a particular race. It could take 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask one other question if I could. Question that came up at the testimony on February 8th about the possibility of write-ins. This committee substitute doesn't apparently prohibit that. What's your opinion about the power of someone to conduct a write-in campaign in a runoff election? Can I do that? If I get beat for governor or don't even run for governor and then decide to run during the runoff because I didn't like the two people that got picked, do I have the power to participate, to conduct a write-in campaign?
This legislation doesn't speak to it, but the law does say write-in campaigns if you're beat in the primary and you run in the general, that you can conduct a write-in campaign because the law speaks to the types of stickers that can be placed on the ballots and that sort of thing, and it has.
It's your interpretation that that language would allow a write-in campaign in a runoff election?
It doesn't prohibit it.
With adoption of any of
this,
there's got to be some statutory changes in the Constitution. I can't remember what the date is, but it allows the general election to be in October, I believe. I believe the Constitution provides for the general election. I can't remember now, but I looked it up to be in October, and the day of the month has been set statutorily back to where it is now anyway. Mary Lou, I'd like to make a comment about your absentee ballots when you say they pose such a problem. When they request absentee ballots, if voter A requests them, he requests at the same time he gets his primary, his general election. In this case, would simply request write-off ballots, they would all go at once, right?
If I understand, your absentee voter is going to request at the time. Some of them do, sir, and some of them don't. they're going to request a primary, a general ballot, and a runoff. Is that my interpretation of your question? And you would say that they would all go out at the same time, or the request would be processed?
No, the request is all processed at once. It's simply a matter of mailing them.
Yes, sir.
Or not mailing them, as the case may be.
Well, I would hope that they would be mailed. But they do have so long a time. I think it's 15 days to get them out to the person that has requested the absentee ballot. And there again, many people do not request all three, particularly college students. They just request the general election ballot on many occasions. I'm not saying it could not be done, sir. I'm saying it would be done if this legislation passed.
I'd like to talk a little more about the certification process.
Yes, sir.
The polls closed, everything goes in the box and it goes down to the election wherever, someplace in a, let's just take Juneau for instance. Poll closes and the poll at the school puts everything in the box, puts the lid on it, and it goes to, let's say, this room. And then it's counted. What happens at that point?
There are two different, Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks are on computer punch card ballots. The rest of the state is not. So we're looking at two different types of counting. We're looking at the people here in Juneau taking their ballot boxes to the state office building. They're taken up to the computer room, and they are counted by the computer. That evening. Then you're looking at,
let's take these ballots here now that have just been counted by the computer.
What happens then? To be sure that the computer has counted them correctly, certain races by the review board, the computer review board chooses various races. Maybe they would choose the race, let's take for example, Senator Ray's race. Senator Ray ran for the state Senate. The computer cards would come down to a counting team of four people. They would say, would you count Senator Ray's race in precinct number 9? Just to be sure that the ballot count was correct. Those ballots then are, after they've been counted, they are taken to the jail cell and locked in the jail cell. Then we sit and wait for the ballots to come in. The people in Sitka count.
But that step right there just kind of amounted to an authentication step, right?
No, sir, it didn't. Because at that point in time, your absentee ballots were not counted, your question ballots were not counted, and some ballots that are non-processable. Maybe they've turned the corners, gotten nervous and turned the corners of one of those computer ballots. Those are set aside and kept until they can be either hand counted and all the absentee ballots have not been processed at that point in time, or any question ballots. You can't process a question ballot until you've looked up the person to be sure they're registered, what precinct they're registered in, and whether they voted the right ballot or not. And certain parts of, say, question ballots, if you came to Juneau and went to precinct number 7 and voted, you would vote a question ballot because you weren't entitled to vote for all the people in Juneau, maybe because you've just been here 2 or 3 days, and it would just be there are some cross-districting votes that are counted. It's a long and very confused process with hundreds of people cooperating to do it in a manner that is reliable and does not compromise the election process.
Okay, now back to the jail cell. All the ones that are counted by the computer are going to the jail cell.
They're locked
now,
in.
Now you wait for...
I wait for the paper ballots from all of Southeast. They basically go to the supervisor, Nome gathers all their ballots from all the Northwest. All the ballots in the Fairbanks area are gathered in the Fairbanks office. All the ballots in the Anchorage office are gathered there. Most of Anchorage itself, those ballots are transported to the election, Division of Elections, with the supervisor of elections or the director and a state trooper. They accompany those ballots to Juneau, and they're placed also in a secured place. The supervisors in the various districts send in their ballots to Juneau. Then they are still gathering question ballots. They're checking the question ballots through the microfiche and through the voter registration. They're checking on the absentee ballots. Those are sent in very big little sacks like this that are sealed and initials so that we know that no one has gotten into those. Those may not be gotten, they are placed into the jail cell. And when the state canvas team appears, only the state canvas team can open any of those boxes.
The canvas team is the authenticator.
Right, that's correct, sir.
Now, how quickly do they arrive on the scene and what do they do?
They can't arrive until 8 days after the election.
8 days?
8 days after the election.
Why 8 day delay?
Well, because it takes quite a while for all these ballots from 413 precincts throughout the state to get down here. They're in one central location. And it takes 7 days for some of the ballots to be finished being processed. You can't process all the absentee ballots in your election supervisor's offices because all of them haven't come in yet.
In effect, what this is a recount they do, right?
No, sir. No, it isn't. It's just to be sure that all these folks actually voted and that this precinct voted. Well, this I picked up the bottom half of the book. I'm sorry. I can't tell you all. It's just, and if they have a question, then they have to go back to the precinct register and count the tally marks to be sure there's no question. Then if they come up with more tally marks in the book, then they have to go to the jail cell and get those ballots out. And the four people sit there and count them to be sure they're correct.
Well, so the certification process is not necessarily a recount.
No,
it's
sir.
It's just a
be sure that everything is on the up and up.
Well, I see. So all they do is authenticate that the people
right.
in the polling place or at the district
did the right
arithmetic
thing.
Arithmetic right.
And if they didn't do their arithmetic right, then they have to find out why they didn't.
I see. For some reason or another, I suspect I'm not a lot different than most people. I thought that your authentic, your certifying the thing meant that it really was kind of a recount.
No, sir. It's a check and balances to be sure that all these people were registered to vote and that all these people who should have signed in this book, then you have to go back and check these names against all these to be sure that indeed, these little check marks were these people over here. And it's a very complicated process, and then you add up the votes to be sure they're all right. The next time we have an election, it'd be kind of interesting to watch the certification. I mean, it's kind of boring, but it's kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, because I can see the majority of your election being certified rather simply. If everything adds up, obviously, the process is nothing.
The process, very, very rarely does the state certification team find out any appreciable difference, sir.
Yeah, that's interesting. The system that you're using there, that's devised by statute? Or, no, the statute doesn't devise
no,
that. That's
sir.
Just election rules that devise that.
That's been being used since I started voting in the state.
Okay. Jay Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary Lou, once the certification process begins, it's a relatively short period of time, or it should take a relatively short period of time if in fact the election judges have tallied all of the ballots in their precincts and districts properly, isn't that true?
The clue word there, Representative Farms, was should and if. We attempt to work with the precinct workers and the judges. We have many very dedicated people out there, but you're dealing with many thousands of people. And perhaps in their hurry, you walked into the precinct or the polling place to vote, and you forgot to sign the register. But they knew you, and they got to talking to you about the power outage or something. And all of a sudden, they're short one ballot, and we can't figure out where it is. And so, but maybe they just checked and didn't. So we're dealing with human, and errors do occur.
Mr. Chairman, I recognize that, it's obviously errors are going to occur, but there's not a great deal of those errors, are there?
Yes, Representative Burns, in this process, there are quite a number. And it does take a great many hours to check 413 precincts.
I recognize that, but you don't have errors in all 413 precincts.
No, except that I'm saying no, there aren't errors in all 413 precincts. But every single one, it takes a great deal of time to check every single one of these signatures for every person that voted in the state.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Mary Lou, you're not telling me that after the people that are working at the polls turn over their ballots to you, that you certify and check every one of those signatures. Is it not that you do it whenever there is an error found in one precinct or more than one precinct?
No, ma'am. I'm telling you that every single signature is checked. Whether there's an error or not, every single one, every single signature of every voter in the state is looked at by the certification team.
So then everybody that voted in every 413 precincts,
that's correct.
Their signature is looked at.
That's correct.
I see. How long does it take you to look at every signature of the people that voted?
I would say that it takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours to check this whole book for one average precinct. And then to go and look at the tally books and the computer printout and to be sure that they all, it's really a mathematical process.
It would be 413 times two hours approximately, more or less, because some of them are obviously very small precincts that are in the rural areas, right?
Those sometimes present us with the biggest puzzles.
Okay, but let's just say an average of 2 hours a precinct, right? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll work out
while
the mathematics.
While you're doing that arithmetic, Representative Foxley, did you have a...
The testimony was on the original HDR approximately $1 million cost to conduct an election. What would it be if you added legislators, which the proposed committee substitute does?
As long as you're going to conduct an election, excuse me, Chairman Buss, may I answer?
Yes, you certainly may.
As long as you're going to have one election for the governor and the lieutenant governor, then if you ran both of those elections at the same time, Representative Clarkson, to my mind, there wouldn't be any added cost. If you're going to run one and ask one question, you might as well run two, except for the printing of some ballots. So,
there is a printing of ballots.
Yes, sir.
But other than that,
yes, you'd have to have this. Every precinct would have to vote, and so I mean, you wouldn't have to have everybody voting in all the legislative races. This is just off my head, but I don't see that there would be any great fiscal impact.
To the committee substitute.
To the committee substitute.
If, however, you ended up having to change the time frame for the legislative races, because we have more time because they don't take office till January, it's possible, I would hope we wouldn't do this, but it's possible you would have two runoff elections. One for governor right before December 4th or whatever, and one for legislator sometime later after all the recounts and stuff. I assume that would increase the amount.
Yes, sir, it would.
Yeah, that would make a mess.
Yeah. I was just visualizing one runoff election and incorporating all of them.
Jose Barnes?
Mary Lou, would approximately 3 days, is that how long it takes you to certify the signatures?
From personal experience, Representative Barnes, no, it did not. We worked long and hard and diligently and worked from 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night and Saturdays and Sundays.
How many days? Because I get from the figures you gave me about.
Well, 2 hours in retrospect and thinking about it, if 2 hours maybe on a small precinct, but you have to go back and you also have to be sure that the ballots on the the judicial ballots, the bonding propositions, that those totals computed, and then you had to add in the absentee votes and the question ones too. So really, it is much longer. To count one of those pages, it might only take 2 hours on a small one. I'm sorry, I really miscalculated. It took us 11 days, and we did it quicker than
11 days?
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
So you need 11 days for the certification plus how many days? I'm trying to get how many days you need.
Oh, after the certification? Well, it would be certified. The ballots would have to be printed. They'd have to be notice given that we were going to have another election. I'd say 60 days, 30 to 60 days at the most. After it was maybe 30 days after it was certified, Representative Barnes.
Mary Lou, just read the present statutes in Title 15. This is in your packet there. Following schedule set out in calendar for,
yes.
It's got the general election date for November 6th and November 14th for the district absentee question ballots are counted. On the 14th, statewide balloting county review begins. On the 21st is the last day to receive all ballots and certificates. Then the 21st to the 26th is 5 days. The election is certified in 5 days.
14th to the 26th, sir. The state ballot review board begins review, and it's generally certified by the 16th, by the November 26th. That's 11 days.
So they start counting before they receive all.
Yes, sir. As soon as they can start, by law, they start. But some of these materials have not all been transmitted from smaller villages. So as soon as they get the whole packet from one, they begin so that they're not waiting for everything in the whole state to come in.
So what you're suggesting there is it might be possible to move the 14th closer to the 6th and increase the time there, because obviously you said some of these are computer driven, rather quickly achieved, and we could begin those countings a lot quicker. You've got 8 days from the general election till the time you begin counting, right?
Yes, sir. But they haven't been tripped. Those are being counted in the area supervisors in Fairbanks and Nome and Anchorage and here in Southeast. There are small fishing villages here in Southeast that are very late in getting theirs to their supervisor.
Well, let's take Juniper's. This is all done in Juniper, right?
The state is done in Juniper.
So, you know, obviously these don't have to be transported anyway.
No, sir, but
is there any reason why you couldn't count those out?
No, sir, there isn't. They have, but the smaller communities have to send them to the Juniper supervisor so that the Juniper supervisor can check if they're questioned. I'm sorry that I seem so confused, but it's a very complicated process to explain. It's easier to do it than to explain it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coxon.
This assumes no recount, is that correct? This time frame and this little chart?
See, they've got a recount date in each one of these. You've got one of these in the package. Yeah. By statute, the day that you can do the recount.
But when the question was asked after certification, how long does it take? The answer was, well, it takes the time to print the ballots and to get them out to people and such. You should add to that the possibility of a recount at the general election.
Now, you see, you've got the built-in recount right now between the primary and the
right.
General here and there. Representative Malone?
Yeah, well, on the question of recount, I think the recount would honestly only apply if you're in a situation, maybe I'm wrong, but... You got 10,000 votes plus or minus 3 or 4, and I got 10,000 votes plus or minus 3 or 4, and the next person on the list got 2,000. Well, we'd both be in a runoff anyway.
If I were in second place and wanted to go into the runoff election saying I was first, I might want to recount anyway.
You were in third place.
Third place,
you might want to decide whether you're going to go up to second place.
Yeah.
Hmm?
That's true.
I mean, that would be the possibility of the recount.
Well, I think we need to work those times until we can reach some sort of an accord and rework that portion of the bill, probably before we hold a whole lot more discussion on it. And a future hearing, we'll attempt to adopt the committee substitute alter the bill so it fits everybody. So this is where we Representative Long.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you through with the committee's immediate consideration of HGR or HGR 8?
Yeah, then I was going to go to HB8. Mary Lou is also going to give us some words on HB8.
Mr. Chairman, I realize House Bill 8 is on the agenda for today, but I'd also like to request time on today's committee schedule for the purpose of holding a closed session of the committee.
We don't have a full committee, and I'd be rather reluctant to do that unless we had all members of the committee here. If we're going to close the session up, we certainly need a full committee present.
Well, that's a... I'm sure that's your view, since you've expressed it. We'll accommodate the members of the committee, but I guess to a point, it may be that people's schedules are such that they can't all be here at one time or at a convenient time. I don't know.
You'd already announced, of course, I think before Representative Long came in, that we wouldn't be hearing House Bill 8 today because the sponsor wasn't here.
All I want to do is pull the Mary Lou's signed on the sheet.
That's fine.
We can't do anything where the sponsor's not here. If she has additional testimony, we should take it while she's here. It's an accommodation as far as I'm concerned.
Just on Representative Malone's request, of course, as you know, that request was made, I think, Thursday or Wednesday. that we have such a session, and I guess under your ruling, any one member could stop there from being an executive session. That's certainly a rule that tends to help the minority, but we've obviously been waiting for several days now to have an executive session and haven't been successful. So I'd be anxious to hear what your plans are.
Would you like to pin down a time, even at night or whatever, so that we can gather everybody up? It's difficult at times to gather everybody together, and I'll certainly work towards that end.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that when the speaker scheduled his calendar for today, that he anticipated that you would request the executive session today, or I'm sure he would have arranged the schedule otherwise. And I would not feel it proper to have it without the full committee here.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm like any other member of the committee, I'm anxious to accommodate all the members of the committee, but I would also like to have this meeting that I'm talking about, and I'd like to ask you then, as chairman, if we were to adopt a rule that we shouldn't hold or accept a motion for an executive session of this committee without all members present, then any member could, in effect, veto the executive session. I'm quite sure that's not the purpose of the absence of members that are absent now, because it wasn't discussed before this. But what I'm saying is that I want to accommodate the members of the committee. I hope the members of the committee would be also willing to accommodate my request.
Okay. I don't think there's any problem with that. I don't think anybody even give it 10 thoughts. I certainly didn't. And, sure, the speaker didn't, and Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, when Representative Malone requested the previous executive session, or whoever did, I'm not sure which one of them requested, or maybe they all did. I think it was, we were all here, and it was our intent to have it at that time. But I think it was at your request, Representative Malone, that we continued to hear a bill that we had pending rather than have an executive session.
That is my recollection.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, I probably made a mistake on that. I was under the impression they were out-of-town witnesses. As it turned out, they were all state employees that testified in the legislation.
Representative Winchie?
I guess I'd just soon not have the executive session without the speaker here, but I guess I would point out that Representative Malone was correct in terms of not holding it. That last half hour of Wednesday's meeting, it was indicated that we would have it following session on Thursday, that what I felt was a commitment. Apparently the majority members did not arrange their schedules. It was stated on the floor of the House on Thursday's session that we would be meeting. In fact, we recessed Wednesday's and Thursday's meeting to hold over until Tuesday. In order to accommodate that, I think you know the seriousness under which at least three members of this committee have felt the need for that discussion. And I would note in the 6 days that have transpired since that first request has been made, have remained very silent, which some other members of this committee have not done on the subjects that are under discussion. And it's not without risk, great discomfort that's being done, or that we hear the statements being made. And I agree that it's certainly appropriate that the speaker be present at that meeting, I'm trying to prevail upon those of your caucus that the spirit of cooperation is being stretched beyond what is appropriate on your part.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I left before the conclusion of the meeting on Wednesday. However, the reason why we scheduled a 9 o'clock early morning floor session on Thursday was because that there were members of the body that had planned to leave town right after session, and the speaker just happened to be one of those. There was not a quorum of the committee left here, if you count the speaker, on Thursday afternoon, because he did leave and left the state on business outside.
Yeah, thanks. Sure, I do want to accommodate the members of the committee, and so I'm not gonna make any motion this time. I realize the members here that would like to participate are not present, but I would say, just announce my intentions that if the chair is not able to schedule a meeting for the purposes of holding, considering a motion for executive session before tomorrow's regularly scheduled meeting, it would be my intention to place a motion at that time.
But we're going to be in trouble doing that. I think Representative Barnes will in Washington, D.C. we're going to be short there, Representative Foxon.
The alternative, of course, is to discuss these matters publicly. And at least one member of this committee has been doing it, and I have not been doing it, based on a commitment I made in an executive session. I'm not going to be considered bound by that commitment if we continue to have delays in cooperation with the minority.
But I don't know what public discussion...
by you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I don't know what public discussion is irritating you, but if you've got somebody that's irritating you, perhaps you'll bring it up. I presume you have a discussion with regard to the subpoena, and nobody has released the subpoena to anybody, nor have they released the name of the subpoena to anybody. And that's that simple. Representative Whitney?
When do you expect to schedule a meeting for the purposes of that we're discussing?
Well, you know, I'll endeavor to gather everybody together as quickly as possible. I don't exactly know what the speaker schedule was. You know, if we really were going to do this today, we should have said something earlier. Other than I had really kind of thought it had all gone by the wayside, but no one has indicated to me anything different. Representative Wells?
Thank you, Chairman. It's probably my oversight, although I believe I had a discussion with you on Thursday, which I asked when the next meeting of the committee would be, and you said it would be today.
Yeah.
And if in any way I conveyed a change of heart or interest in holding and placing a motion before the committee for the executive session, then I apologize, but I still think it is important to the members of the committee that we do meet in executive session for purposes of discussing items which may be prejudicial to the character or reputation of an individual.
Just a procedural matter on that. I forget the words you used on the floor, but to hold over, what was the word?
Continue to
recess or continue a meeting until a later date.
No, we
I guess as a procedural matter, I'd be concerned with a continuing use of that. The purpose of it, of course, is to not have to announce a public meeting and just go ahead and call it. Expect the press and the public to figure out when that meeting is going to be.
But we didn't do that, Representative Clark.
I understand
we
that.
We continued it to a specific hour,
right.
A specific date, so that no one would assume it.
Right. I'm just expressing my concern that if that technique is used to conduct a meeting of this committee, a public meeting of this committee, at a time other than the normal meeting time, without advance notice to the public, I think that it would be somewhat of a travesty on the Open Meetings Act, and I'd be concerned about it.
Mr. Chairman, the normal meeting time of this committee is 1:30. 1:30 to 3 o'clock every day. And whenever this committee adjourned last Wednesday, and again, my apologies for having to leave early, there was some sort of a motion made by someone, whom I don't know, to not adjourn this committee meeting, but to hold it sort of limbo until such time as we met again. That was on Wednesday. Yet, we all knew we were having a early session on Thursday because there were members of the body that were leaving town. And to have made a motion to help the committee in limbo to Thursday when it was obvious any number of us were not going to be here, I think put not only an inconvenience on the members that were here, but the committee chairman to have to make some kind of a motion to say that the committee would not be meeting on Thursday. But yet here we are, our normal meeting time on Tuesday. Obviously there were not people here to meet on Monday. And so we're having our normal meeting at our normal meeting time, and I don't think that the chairman has in any way tried to hold a meeting that was not conducive to the public meeting law or public policy.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting that if the technique is used in the future, it may well do that. I think, by the way, Representative Barnes, the tape will show that the chair of the committee indicated that he had anticipated a meeting following the 9 o'clock session, specifically at 10 o'clock on Thursday.
Mr. Chairman, just to respond, and there's no real need to prolong this debate, but I don't know how the chairman could possibly have anticipated a 10 o'clock meeting when we didn't anticipate that we would get off the floor at 10 o'clock. And that's doing an awful lot of anticipating. And again, I think that we all knew we held an early session for the particular purpose of people leaving this building as soon as the session was over with. I don't think that there was ever any question about that. And for us to try to continue a committee meeting upon the adjournment of the session would have made no sense for us to have a 9 o'clock floor session.
All seven members of the committee were present at 10 a.m. on Thursday on the floor.
That's true, and Mr. Speaker was leaving just upon adjournment, which he did do.
We're back onto our contest, but I guess I would... I think the chairman knows when commitments were made to have meetings that were not conducted. The speaker got on the airplane with me at 12:15. We had at least an hour in the building to conduct a meeting of which we requested a half hour. And in fact, we held a caucus instead. The speaker, when I talked to him on the floor Thursday, was concerned on why we hadn't done it Thursday night or Wednesday night. That was the other suggestion from the chairman, which again he did not schedule because of the commitment to have it on Thursday. And on Thursday, the commitment to have it today, I can't imagine, given the extent of the conversation on the floor on Thursday when the rescheduling was put forth, that the chairman did not have an idea that there was still a need for the meeting. Maybe if that's the case, maybe there's not a need for the meeting. I'm not real sure myself anymore.
Jose Malone?
Yeah, thank you, sir. I just might say that, you know, the consideration of the fact that there are members of committee absent right now, that if the chair is not able to schedule a meeting for this purpose before the regularly scheduled time committee tomorrow, I do intend to place a motion for an executive session at tomorrow's meeting. This other discussion may or may not be relevant. As I said, I do want to accommodate committee members as far as possible.
I don't know what the legal moves are for making a meeting between now and tomorrow, whether that's legally possible or not. No, we got into a recess situation the other day, and Billy Barrier suggested the legal ways to get out of recess and get to where we are now. We got accused already of holding one illegal executive session. Whether we're guilty of that or not, there's some huge question in my mind. If I'm guilty, I'm human. I try to do the best I can, and try to do as open as I can, right as I can, and if that's not good enough, perhaps those of the press that are so critical would just like to fire me over it. And we'll continue to do the best we can, irrespective of them. And I have every intentions of accommodating you, if at all possible, to do that. And nobody is certainly running from an accommodation, so if you're indicating that, it's not well received.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I said was that, you know, I want to announce my intention, members of the committee, you are president, and I don't think I've suggested or has anyone urged that the chair do anything illegal. I'm sure you wouldn't, even if we urged it, so.
By the way,
Representative Coxon,
staff managed to locate the statute referred to by that reporter that made our meeting illegal.
No, I did in the strangest interpretation of it, that's beside the point. So we're talking about people, and so it's all okay. I don't know how we could, without checking with Billy Barrier, how we could legally, between now and tomorrow, even have another meeting without an announcement, without getting into the same mess. But it hadn't occurred to me to have to get into a position where I'd have to find that out as quick. So I guess I can do that. Representative Barnes?
Mr. Chairman, since the question was raised by Representative Clarkson of the statute such relates to the public meeting and executive session and open session law, I did look that up because I was curious as to where it came from. And what it says is that a person that is being, that we've made the motion and the statement, and I'm paraphrasing, excuse me, that is under discussion, if they wish it to be an open session, then they can so state. I think the motion that I recall making, and I'm sure I'm the one made the motion for executive session, was that we were, that I move we go into executive session for the purposes of discussing matters that might be prejudicial to persons or persons unknown, but I didn't say unknown, but it was unknown. Still remains unknown. So how could we have asked a particular person to say that they wanted us to be public when we didn't know who we were talking about?
I didn't mean to start a discussion about whether or not the newspaper reporter was correct. I just want to look at the statute, and if he was correct, I don't want to make the same mistake again. I'm not saying he's wrong or right.
It's in print.
That's true. That's true. I forgot.
Well, since I made the motion, I was curious enough to find out.
I'll endeavor to accommodate this between now and tomorrow if I can figure out a legal way to do it. How's that? Representative Malone?
Yeah, well, by way of suggestion, Mr. Chairman, I don't have any on a meeting between now and tomorrow morning session, but there are other times available besides perhaps 1:30, and I consider it important enough that the committee should meet early, say at 12:30 or at 1 o'clock for the purpose, if the agenda otherwise makes it difficult for members to attend. But in any case, I do intend to place that motion at the next regular meeting, unless there's a meeting earlier than that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Malone, if there's any way possible to hold such a meeting, I would like that meeting to take place today, before we leave tonight, because I will leave on the airplane at 7 o'clock in the morning. And since I happen to be one of the majority members of this committee, I would not like the meeting to take place without me knowing what's going on.
I'd like you to be present.
Thank you.
If we can legally accommodate that, we will attempt to do it. I'll have to call and dial the rule maker and see what the rules are. Okay, nothing further to come before the case this time. We will because we're adjourned until 1:30 tomorrow, unless I can accommodate some kind of a special meeting in the meantime.